All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are talking about the coaching and front office changes with Raheem Morris taking over as interim coach, the dismissal of Falcons general manager Thomas Dimitroff, and what direction this team is headed based off of the words of owner Arthur Blank and president Rich McKay.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Help support local businesses, whether they're your corner stores, coffee spots, or favorite shops. Local businesses have always been on your team, supporting you and your community. But right now, more than ever, local businesses need our support, so let's be there for them. The next time you go shopping, make the choice to shop at local businesses and look for the contactless symbol and tap to pay with a contactless Visa to help support your community, because where and how you shop matters. Visa, everywhere you want to be, official partner of the NFL. So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly on FalcFans.com, RIP, currently on Twitter at FalcFans, and, of course, hosting this illustrious, preeminent Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. And today's episode, we are going to be catching you up on the news if you missed it Sunday evening and Monday night. Thomas Dimitroff is out as general manager. We'll talk about that and sort of his legacy in Atlanta, where what things he got right, what things he got wrong over the course of his 12 plus years in Atlanta as the Falcons general manager, and maybe some pitfalls that his successor, whoever the next general manager will be, may have to avoid in order to improve upon what Thomas Dimitroff has done over the last 12 years. We'll talk about Arthur Blank's and Rich McKay's press conference and sort of the things that they talked about and what they're looking for in the next general manager, what they're looking for in the next head coach. We'll talk quite a bit about sort of what's left at stake this season under interim head coach Raheem Morris and what this team needs to do from an evaluation standpoint, looking primarily at the quarterback position on that aspect of today's Locked On Falcons podcast. But we'll sort of kick things off with our Locked On Falcons lead story and sort of catch you guys up with the coaching changes, with the promotion of Raheem Morris, some shuffling of priorities and responsibilities on offense, defense, and special teams now that he is taking over as the Falcons interim coach, some additions or some added responsibilities in the front office, and sort of how the Falcons are hoping that that will lead to at least maybe a few more butts in seats for the remainder of 2020 on our Locked On Falcons lead story. So the Falcons made it official on Sunday evening, relieving head coach Dan Quinn and general manager Thomas Dimitroff of their duties effective immediately. On Monday, they named current Falcons defensive coordinator Raheem Morris as the interim head coach to replace Quinn, and team president Rich McKay will fill Dimitroff's shoes and oversee the front office. There were other coaching changes announced on Monday as well, with Falcons assistant head coach and linebackers coach Jeff Ulbrich being promoted to fill Morris's vacated defensive coordinator gig, running backs coach Bernie Parmalee replacing fired special teams coordinator Ben Kotuka, and offensive assistant Will Harriger replacing Parmalee at running back coach. And McKay also indicated that Falcons national college scout Ruston Webster would be returning to Atlanta to help him manage the day-to-day operations of the team in front office. Whether Ulbrich will have complete control over the defensive play calling hasn't officially been announced. Since the middle of 2019, when Quinn restructured defensive play calling duties, Ulbrich has handled play calls on first and second down, while Morris took over calling plays on third downs and during the two-minute drill. Perhaps now Ulbrich will take over duties on third downs and two-minute situations, now that Morris's priorities as interim head coach will lie on both sides of the ball. As for Parmalee, he replaces Kotuka on special teams, a coach that he served under as an assistant special teams coach in 2019. Parmalee was moved back to the Falcons running back coach this past year, a role that he served as well in 2018 in his first year in Atlanta. Kotuka was hired by the Falcons in 2019 to replace longtime special teams coordinator Keith Armstrong, who's now with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Harriger is an offensive assistant who has experience working with quarterbacks dating from his days as an assistant with the Seattle Seahawks prior to his stint in Atlanta, as well as being a defensive assistant and linebackers coach primarily during several years coaching at the collegiate level. Webster has been with the Falcons since 2016 after a four-year stint as the Tennessee Titans general manager. Prior to that, he worked with the Seahawks as well as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where he worked under Rich McKay when he was the general manager of that team, as well as with Morris when he was a low-level defensive assistant. Clearly, the Falcons are shuffling things in the hopes that it will provide a spark for the remaining 11 games in 2020. With Morris getting the chance to call the shots and already remodeling the team more in his image now that he's the interim head coach, time will tell if this shuffling pays off. Not in the sense of the Falcons necessarily getting their season back on track in terms of making the playoffs with their 0-5 start. You know, we know that ship has already sailed, but maybe it'll give fans something to root for, something to be potentially proud of, proud enough to brave the dangers of COVID-19 and start to pack Mercedes-Benz Stadium a little bit more than they did this past weekend. Fans were allowed into their first Falcons home game this past Sunday in the Falcons week 5 loss to the Carolina Panthers, and the official attendance was clocked at over 6,500 attendees, which is less than 10% of the stadium when it's filled to its normal capacity of over 71,000. So obviously with COVID concerns, you're still going to have limited capacity, but I'm sure Arthur Blank would like to see that number at least double by year's end. And Blank indicated to the media in a press conference on Monday that Morris will have every opportunity to potentially coach his way into earning the full-time gig as the Falcons head coach. So time will tell what the Falcons look like over these last 11 games and whether Morris can get this team their first win this upcoming week when they face the Minnesota Vikings on the road. So guys, there's your Locked On Falcons lead story, and we'll continue today's episode by getting into the legacy of Thomas Dimitroff, talking about the things that he did right, things that he did wrong. But if you want to do things right when it comes to your car or truck, you should check out rockauto.com. They have everything from engine control modules, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new floor mats. Get everything you need in just a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. Rock Auto. The rockauto.com catalog is unique, easy to navigate. You can quickly see all the parts available for your car or truck and browse by brand, specification, and the price that you prefer. And those prices at rockauto.com are always reliably low. The same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? So go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in the How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. So let's talk about the legacy of Thomas Dimitroff. And as I talked about on yesterday's podcast, talking about the dismissal of Dan Quinn and some of the reasons why Dan Quinn was dismissed, go back and listen to yesterday's episode if you want to get more in depth. But basically, I explained on that episode that I don't think Thomas Dimitroff was necessarily calling the shots here in Atlanta these last couple of years in the Dan Quinn era. I think sort of Dan Quinn was sort of the guy that was operating the blueprint for what this team's roster should and should not look like. And I think Dimitroff's job was primarily to execute that roster. But it was obviously a much more collaborative effort than necessarily, you know, one guy dictating to the other. So when we talk about Dimitroff's legacy, for me at least, a lot of it starts with his mostly in terms of the moves that he was responsible with. I think a lot of it is centered on his 7 years, you know, working with Mike Smith, where I feel like he had a lot more significant influence on the team's roster decisions at that point in time. But revisiting his legacy, you know, he was hired in 2008. Alongside head coach Mike Smith, his first ever draft pick with the Falcons was Matt Ryan. His first big splash in free agency was Michael Turner. So those were some big moves that really sort of set the table for this team's success over the next 5 years and beyond. 3 years really with Michael Turner, and then, you know, 12 years in counting with Matt Ryan. But obviously they hit a little bit of a skid after those first 5 years in 2013, 2014 that led to Mike Smith's dismissal. Dimitroff was able to retain his job upon the hiring of Dan Quinn in 2015. There were some early rumors over the first year or so of those two working together that the Falcons would be looking to move on from Dimitroff as a general manager, that maybe Dan Quinn would make a power play given sort of those responsibilities in terms of having that roster control and maybe bringing in somebody that he was savvier on working with, but those rumors never really came to fruition. Both guys have always insisted for years and years that they have a great collaborative working relationship, and that probably contributes to why Arthur Blank felt compelled to move on from both guys, because they seemingly attached themselves to each other's hips over the last 5 years. But Dimitroff, very highly regarded around the league and in NFL circles, in large part due to his longevity here in Atlanta, having been the Falcons general manager for 12 plus years, you know, having that level of longevity is pretty uncommon in today's NFL, you know, and that certainly is deserving of many of the accolades that he gets. It's hard to be a general manager that long in the league and not be at least decent at your job. Although I'm sure Washington football team fans and talking about Bruce Allen might beg to differ on that one. But I think Dimitroff had a lot of success. You know, the Falcons sported a 113-94 record, winning about 50, if my math is right, 54-57% of their games, including the playoffs during Dimitroff's era, which is pretty successful. He had successful drafts. I know he gets a lot of flack for some of the missed picks, but I think in general, he had a lot of successful drafts. I think he stewarded a lot of the acquisition of some top level talent that raised expectations here in Atlanta to the highest they've ever been in this franchise's history. And while the team often failed to live up to those expectations, the fact that several times over the past 12 plus years, this team was considered a legitimate Super Bowl contender is not nothing. And, you know, obviously a lot of this era of Falcons history was well before my time, but I would imagine over the first 40 or so years of this team's history prior to Dimitroff's arrival, you didn't have that many instances where the Falcons would have been considered anybody, at least credible Super Bowl pick. You know, I could, you know, you probably count on one hand and probably not even get to your last finger counting how many times over the first 40 plus years that was the case. And I'm sure that you can probably count on one hand and possibly even make it to your second hand counting in terms of how many years that has been the case in the Thomas Dimitroff era since 2008. And so I think he definitely deserves credit for that. And I think generally speaking, his legacy where the good outweighs the bad. And I think that has to be taken into account. But you know me, I have to, you know, I have a long storied legacy of complaining about various Thomas Dimitroff based moves. A lot of these are sort of because, again, I put so much emphasis on his time during the Mike Smith era. A lot of these grudges, you could say, stem from, you know, the earlier part of this past decade than necessarily in recent years. But I think really ultimately with Dimitroff, you know, when we talk about, you know, why he didn't necessarily succeed more than the success that he did legitimately have here in Atlanta, you know, ultimately, I think it boils down to complacency being a problem. And it seemed like under both coaches, Quinn and Smith, that the Falcons did a great job building those first couple of years. In both cases, I think the first 3 years, 2008 to 2010 under Smith, 2015 to 2017 under Quinn. And I think got a little complacent after that with the success that they had achieved in those years and, you know, likely focused on their win totals and got content from a talent standpoint in terms of the talent that they had already assembled up to that point and never really pushed to add more. And then shortly thereafter, for various reasons, the talent diminished, the bottom dropped out on certain elements of the team, and they just didn't have the talent to sort of sustain that initial success into sort of what we could call maybe the second wave of talent acquisition that they were supposed to have. And you look back at the Smith era, you saw this again in 2008 to 2010, where they were adding a lot of assets to that team, inheriting some assets, but then starting in 2011 with the Julio Jones trade and continuing with additions, focusing on sort of veterans to sort of get them over the hump with Asante Samuel in 2012 and Steven Jackson and Osei Umenyor in 2013, you saw this team looking more for like, what's that last piece of the puzzle as opposed to continuing to lay the bedrock of their foundation. And I think you saw the talent level diminish over time. You know, a lot of the talent that they had acquired early on or inherited early on from the previous regime sort of aged out. At that point in time, going into the 2013 and 2014 years, and that sort of next generation, that second wave of talent didn't quite hit. And all of a sudden you go from a team that's, you know, averaging 11 wins over the first 5 years of Mike Smith's tenure to a team that's struggling to win 6 games, you know, by the end of it. And you saw a similar pattern happen with Dan Quinn, not exactly the same thing, but that kind of more or less started in 2018 in that fourth year again after 3 years of solid billing, where they let veterans like Poe and Claiborne go and they're content to basically trust in Tack and Vic Beasley to sort of pick up the slack and fill those shoes. You know, they punt on the offensive line for years and years, and that ultimately comes back to bite them without having those young draft picks when they're free agents with in 2018 and 2019. And then, you know, we talked about this with Dan Quinn, with sort of their defensive identity being built around a really strong secondary with guys like Trufant and Alford sort of aging out, and then sort of their next generation of corners with Jalen Collins and Isaiah Oliver not being able to fill those shoes adequately. So it's not a direct one-to-one correspondence, but you can certainly see similar patterns with both guys. And I think, you know, there were some significant flaws in the team when you watched them play, certainly when I was watching them play. And simply, if you just looked at some of the stats in certain areas of the team, that you would say maybe they still need to make a significant push in terms of making more investments in certain areas of the roster. But I think the complacency came in because it was like, oh, well, we won double digit games last year, so we're ultimately kind of fine. And I don't think that's an issue that's specific to Thomas Dimitroff. I think this is pretty common in NFL. I think, you know, one of the things I've learned listening to folks like Mike Lombardi, former NFL GM, you know, is that self-evaluation is one of the more difficult parts of being an NFL general manager and running an NFL team. And I think you see this often in the NFL, where a sort of a new coach or new general manager will come in, they'll have some initial success, but it's very hard to sustain it. You know, you look at teams like the Eagles, you look at the Rams, the 49ers, teams that have represented the NFC in the Super Bowl in the years since Atlanta. And some of these teams are also seemingly, you know, we'll see how 2020 plays out, but a lot of these teams are similarly struggling with sort of these Super Bowl hangovers, whether they won the Super Bowl or lost the Super Bowl, that are not quite being able to sustain the success that they achieved in those prior years where they were sort of on top of the world. And it's sort of just another indicator that the NFL stands for not for long. And, you know, it's the idea of if you're not trying to move things forward, if you're not growing, you're dying, sort of that mentality. The Packers would be a great example, just to use another NFC example, where earlier this decade, at the beginning of this decade, after they won their first Super Bowl in 2010, you know, everybody was declaring them they're going to be the next dynasty. They're going to be the team to beat like the Patriots have been for the previous decade. You know, they're going to be the team of the decade. And, you know, in the year since, you know, despite having McCarthy, despite having Ted Thompson, they never really sort of sniffed getting back to the top of that mountain in the decade since. Now, maybe that changes now with a new GM and a new head coach currently there in Green Bay. You know, I think you saw this with the Falcons, where I remember talking to the former host of Locked On Patriots, you know, on the Tuesday after that Super Bowl loss, and, you know, he was very reassuring and saying like, oh, the Falcons will be fine. They got a lot of young talent. They'll get back, right? It's this idea of they lost this time, but they'll get back. And we saw that did not prove to be true. And so, you know, you can make the argument that under Dimitroff, the Falcons kind of fell into the trap of thinking that way, that, oh, we'll be back. We're fine. We have all this young talent. And now we're 3.5 years later. And, you know, Dimitroff and among others, people are out of jobs, and that's the cost of losing in the NFL. It's, you know, you got to win. We'll see if the next regime is able to, you know, weather that storm, and potentially, you know, if that's going to be a challenge that they're going to have to face. If they find some initial success here in Atlanta over the next couple of years, are they going to be able to sustain it long term? That's really difficult in the NFL. It's one of those things where you know, you see it time and time again. Teams have these sort of short windows, and you're sitting there thinking like, oh, we're going to be fine for the next 5 years. And it's like, no, you had like two bites at the apple. And if you don't take advantage of those bites at the apple, you may not get another one for another 5 to 7 years or something like that. And so that's a reality that this team is now dealing with. And you know, the other realities that this team is going to have to deal with, we'll find out more. And my sort of main takeaways listening to what Arthur Blank and Rich McKay had to say in their press conference today, where they talked with the media, talking about the future of this franchise and sort of what they may be looking for in a new coach and sort of what plans they might have for Matt Ryan, as well as other players on the Falcons roster. And we'll get into that coming up on today's podcast. But So we're talking about general managers breaking through that wall of complacency, and we all have walls that we have to break through, and you need energy to break through those walls, and you don't want to have to sacrifice taste to do so, and you won't have to by going over to BuiltGo.com. BuiltGo is brought to you by the same people that bring you the great tasting protein bars of Built Bar. Built Go comes in three delicious flavors, peanut butter honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. They're easy to take, easy to transport. I can slide them in my pocket, and whenever I need them, I can pull them out. I like mixing them in with yogurt for that energy boost in the morning to break through whatever wall I'm dealing with that day, whether it's fighting with Falcon fans on Twitter about such and such, or whatever you need to break through that wall. And you can do so with Built Go by visiting BuiltGo.com. Use the promo code LOCKED to get 20% off your next order. Again, use that promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go. So let's talk about Arthur Blank and Rich McKay's live press conference on Monday. And sort of my main takeaways were listening to it is Arthur Blank, you know, primarily was stressing winning. He wants to win. He promised this fan base that they were going to win. And the reason why he fired Dan Quinn was they weren't winning. And he also stressed sort of when it comes to the next person, he wants someone who's going to win. You know, he even quoted the God, Al Davis, RIP, you know, saying, just win, baby. He said when he talked about the next coach, he wants someone who's going to win. And he also stressed culture. And for Arthur Blank, that's sort of the sort of community focused culture that he has cultivated here in Atlanta, particularly over the last 13 or so years. And, you know, someone that's going to fit into that, someone who's not going to be an embarrassment off the field and whatnot. I know some people say, well, you know, you need to focus on not embarrassing yourselves on the field, Arthur Blank, because that's really the problem right now, which, you know, if that's how you feel, that's how you feel. But, you know, I thought that was interesting from Arthur Blank. The other thing that they talked about was they didn't really make any commitment to Matt Ryan or any other players on this offense in terms of, you know, one of the questions was asked, like, because of the nature of the roster, do you want to go after an offensive minded coach? And they made no commitment. Basically, they said, we're going to hire the best person for the job. Who's going to win and fit in with our culture? That was interesting that they didn't make any sort of strong commitment to Matt Ryan and his ability to play here till he's 40, as he's indicated in the past. They basically said that they have no intention of handcuffing the next head coach, the next general manager, with trying to win with the current group. If they feel like they can come in and win with these guys, then they'll have the opportunity. If they come in and feel like they have to sort of blow it up, then they also will potentially have that opportunity. Notably, Rich McKay mentioned that he wasn't overly concerned with the salary cap. I agree with him on that. I think it's certainly a speed bump. It's a hurdle, but it's not something that's debilitating or crippling, as I think a lot of people want to portray the Falcons' salary cap situation. I mean, the Saints have proven this for, I don't know, the last decade that the salary cap is a joke. But, you know, the Chiefs kind of just proved this too. They had like $170,000 during this past offseason and now have like, I don't know, like $11 million or something like that. And it's like, yeah. So, you know, I think it brings us about sort of what's next for this team. You know, as I mentioned at the top, Raheem Morris will have an opportunity to take the job. You know, Arthur Blank kind of jokingly, although I don't know if he was truly joking, was like, you know, if Raheem goes 11-0, you know, I think there's a good chance he'll win the job. You know, and that's sort of, again, the stress that Arthur Blank expects you, you know, Arthur Blank is just like a fan like the rest of us. He expects you to win every single week. So we'll see about that. But I think, you know, the two big things for the Falcons are both related to evaluating. You know, the one is evaluating the roster for the remainder of the season and sort of figuring out how many of these young players currently on the team that are being asked to play prominent roles or maybe not yet quite asked to play prominent roles are going to be assets for this next regime. You know, or are they going to be players that we're going to have to find ways to replace over the next couple of off seasons? You know, basically, are you going to be the next Laurent Robinson or are you going to be the next Steven Nicholas? The other big thing is going to be evaluating Matt Ryan. And this was something I discussed on Locked On NFL's podcast on Monday, sort of talking about the dismissal of Dimitroff and Dan Quinn with host Peter Bukowski. And sort of, you know, the big question that's going to linger over this team for the remainder of the season is going to be, what do you do with Matt Ryan? You know, and this was something I discussed back in August. If you go back and listen to the episode that where we talked about the Falcons cutting Danny Etling, and at the end of the episode that like the last, you know, 10 or so minutes, 10, 12 minutes of that episode, we talked quite a bit about sort of, you know, and what prompted it was someone asking the question about, you know, is Kurt Benkert going to be the future starter here in Atlanta? And I was kind of like, no, but that is a question that is going to have to be answered in the near future with the Falcons. And the thing that I mentioned on that episode, and again, I recommend you, I think it was like August 12th or August 18th or something like that. Somewhere in the middle of August, we talked about that. You know, it's got Danny Etling in the title. So definitely go back and listen to that episode to get more insights into this subject. But basically what I talked about in that episode was that if the Falcons didn't make the playoffs this year, you're going to start to hear the conversation about whether the Falcons need to move on from Matt Ryan is going to start to get louder. And we're here, you know, like we're clearly already there. Unfortunately, because of the 0-5 start, you know, I don't think we would be having that conversation if the Falcons were 3-2, like they quote unquote should be. But, you know, I think the tendency in this conversation is the loudest voices tend to be sort of the extreme ends of the conversation and the extreme ends of the take, which is, you know, the one end is like, there's nothing wrong with Matt Ryan. All of it's Dirk Cutter's fault. Any talk of getting rid of Matt Ryan is crazy, blah, 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 blah. And then the sort of the other end of the conversation is the opposite. It's like, oh, Matt Ryan's completely washed. He's done. He can't compete in this level. He stinks. You know, we're better served going with a young rookie player or whatever the case may be. And I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. You know, where you sort of fall on that spectrum, you know, is up to you. But I think mostly the truth, at least right now, I sort of fall is in the middle somewhere. And maybe depending on how the rest of the next 11 games go, you know, may change my mind on that. But, you know, I do think a significant part of it is play calling. I just don't think Cutter's system is particularly quarterback friendly, particularly by 2020 standards, maybe by 2012 standards, which is something we've talked about previously on the podcast. I do think Julio's injury has been a significant contributor to some of Matt Ryan's struggles. And that points back to Cutter's previous stint in Atlanta, where you go back, especially in 2013 and 2014, when you didn't have Julio Jones out there doing Julio things, this offense was extremely ordinary. And I think it's not a coincidence that in the three games where Julio Jones has been largely absent, Matt Ryan has not played well. But I do think there are areas of the game that Matt Ryan needs to improve upon. And I do think it's fair to question whether or not these are automatically going to improve with a new head coach and a new play caller and a new offensive coordinator. And I think, you know, the first thing I've talked about, and I talked about this last year, which, you know, if I can go on a tangent slightly, is again, one of the reasons why you should listen to Locked On Falcons, because a lot of the conversations that people have now are like, oh, we had this conversation 3 months ago. We had this conversation 6 months ago. We had this conversation a year ago. And it's not because like I'm a genius, you know, prophet or anything like that. Prophecy, who knows anything about that, but it's just simply, I watch film. And you can find a lot of stuff watching film, you know, well ahead of other people, you know, going back to Michael Turner, you know, in September of 2011, I'm like, hey, man, Michael Turner's washed. That was basically my take then. And people were like, you're crazy. And then, you know, a year later, guess what? He was washed. So I think, you know, Matt Ryan and his pocket presence and his ability to be non-allergic to pressure needs to improve. That's something that can be a death knell if your quarterback is allergic to pressure. And particularly these last couple of weeks, I think he's been a little too skittish in the pocket at times. Not overwhelmingly so, but a couple of plays where it's like, Matt, you probably should have stood a little bit taller in the pocket there and delivered rather than, you know, feeling that sort of phantom pressure and evading. Just a couple of plays a game. And you know, that can be the difference between, you know, particularly in the red zone, that can be the difference between, you know, scoring and settling for field goals, which can be the difference between winning and losing. I think the other issue that he needs to improve upon is his timing and touch on deep passes. He's missed a bunch of those in recent weeks. Now, that was an issue at the first half of 2017, and it was a big reason, you know, I think he was statistically like the worst, or if not the worst, and the second worst deep passer, according to Pro Football Focus, over like the first 7 or 8 games of that 2017 season. And that was a big contributor to why the offense had a lot of ups and downs. And that's a contributor to why the offense isn't as explosive then, and as well as why the offense isn't as explosive now as it probably should be. That's been a big issue for them the last couple of games. So I think if he can get that back, and he did get it back in 2017, in the second half of that season, maybe he gets it back in the second half of this season, as well as future seasons. We've seen that recover with Matt Ryan. So I think that will mitigate a lot of the issues, that if all of a sudden you're starting to generate a lot more big plays or a regular amount of big plays rather than, you know, one or two a game, which it seems like to be the case the last couple of weeks, you know, that changes a lot of things. But again, I think Cutter's offense is not built to be explosive. It's built to be a dink and dunk offense, which again is why I think a lot of the issues are Dirk Cutter related. But, you know, it's hard for me to sit here and say Matt Ryan's done, right? I feel like a lot of these issues that are coming up are connected to a lack of confidence, a lack of comfort in the play calling, which were, to me, some of the biggest contributors to why he also struggled in 2015 under Kyle Shanahan and in 2017 under Steve Sarkisian. And I think that was an issue last year as well. So I think the big concern with that, in addition to sort of whether Matt Ryan improves over the next, you know, 11 games, is that going to be something that's going to be a bigger issue with a new play caller next year? You know, time is going to tell. A lot of unknowns right now, and we'll sort of have to see how they shake out. We can't necessarily know that right now. A lot of that will depend on who the next head coach is, who the next general manager is, and we'll just sort of have to cross that bridge when we get to it. But until then, you know, I think not for everybody's sake, because obviously other people are strongly on, you know, hoping against this. But, you know, for my sake, I hope that Matt Ryan plays better, because, you know, I don't necessarily want to see it all come crashing down just yet. And, you know, sitting here right now, last thought I'll say is, if we're betting on, you know, the probability of getting top 10 quarterback play out of our quarterback next year is much higher with Matt Ryan than it is with the rookie quarterback. Just, you know, rookie quarterbacks playing at that level, whether it's year one or year two, is not that common, even for a top five pick. So that's something to keep in mind moving forward. So if you want, if you know, if Arthur Blank wants to win, if that's what he's all about, then I do think it's in his best interest, you know, that Matt Ryan at least plays well enough that can give the next coaching staff confidence that he can win with him. So we'll see how that shakes out. And this is going to be something that we're going to continue to talk about on Locked On Falcons, as well as elsewhere on the Locked On Podcast Network for the coming months. And, you know, potentially years. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But appreciate you guys for tuning in for another episode. I believe tomorrow we might be able to get Jeff Schultz on the podcast to talk more about what's going on with the Falcons and the changes. And then, of course, we'll finally turn our attention to the next game against Minnesota Vikings on Thursday. And we'll probably get more into that on Friday as well. If you have questions that you want answered, about the Carolina game or anything really, you can of course send them in to Twitter at Locked On Falcons, Facebook at Locked On Falcons, or send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Appreciate you guys for listening to another illustrious episode of the Locked On Falcons podcast. Until then.